I have two texts for this morning, one from the 32nd and the other from the 33rd chapter. The first from the 32nd chapter, in which Jacob named the place Peniel, saying, I have seen God face to face and lived. And the second text is from the 10th verse of the 33rd chapter, in which Jacob says to his brother Esau, to see your face is like seeing the face of God. With such graciousness have you received me. There always comes a day of reckoning, a day when you have to come face to face with your past. Now, those of you who have been following along with us as we go through Genesis these past 8 weeks realize that there was something always a little bit slippery about Jacob. He was always striving, reaching for something more. His very name means heel grabber, given to him at his birth, because as he and his twin brother were being born, Jacob reached his hand out and grabbed Esau's heel in order to pull him back into the birth canal. And by hook or crook in the pursuing years, Jacob took Esau's birthright and then stole his blessing by taking advantage of his elderly blind father. So there was always a day of reckoning, and Jacob knew it would have to come. For Jacob, the day he decided to return home and face his older brother Esau was that day of reckoning. At some level, Jacob always knew that in order to return home, he would have to pass through Esau. And on the night before he was to meet Esau, he sent his family across the river a safe distance away, and there he wrestled alone in a retreat of sorts. He wrestled with a stranger in the night, in the dark night of the soul, as he wrestled with his past. Speaking of such an experience, Henry Nouwen once wrote of the questions that he experienced on his dark night of the soul, questions that ran through his mind. Questions like, did I offer peace today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did I say words of healing or harm? Did I let go of my anger and resentment? Did I forgive? Did I love? And then Nouwen wrote, these are the real questions of life. I must trust that the little bit of love that I sow now will bear much fruit in this world as well as in the life to come. As the morning sun rose over the eastern sky, Jacob was a different person, forever changed. He left his encounter with this stranger with a new name, Israel, which means he who strives with God. And he had a different countenance about him. For you see, he now walked with a limp, a mark in the place where he was touched by the hand of God. A constant reminder of that night. When we come face to face with our past, we cannot help but to be broken, or perhaps to recognize our brokenness, as I told the children in the children's message. Centuries later, another man who also had a name change, one from Saul to Paul, had an encounter with the Holy One also. You see, three different times the Apostle Paul prayed to have a thorn removed from his side. We have no idea what this thorn was. And then after praying on the third time, the Apostle Paul wrote in his second letter to the Corinthian church at the 12th chapter in the 9th verse, he had one of those rare mystical experiences when Jesus spoke to him and said, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. God likes broken things. It takes broken grain to make bread. It takes crushed grapes to make the fruit of the vine, the very elements of our Lord's Supper. With the morning's light, Israel, as he was now known, set his face toward home and his rendezvous with Esau, his rendezvous with reconciliation. From a distance, he saw Esau and a band of 400 men with him. And then he saw Esau running toward him, and I wonder if in Jacob's eye, he wondered if Esau was carrying a sword to kill him as he had pledged that he would, or maybe a spear to throw at him. But like the prodigal father in Jesus' parable, centuries later, Esau came open-handed and threw his arms around Israel's neck in love and forgiveness. And Israel said, "To see your face is like seeing the face of God. With such grace have you received me." Forgiveness and reconciliation are so central to the Christian faith that it can only be lived out fully in light of those twin realities. Years ago, I said to my father, after about 20 years of ministry, he'd been estranged from a younger sister, and I said to my dad, "I do not believe that God condemns anyone to hell, but here's what I do believe, is that when we stand outside the gates of heaven, that holding the gate's door is the person or people with whom we are most estranged from in this life. And we must greet them and shake their hand and receive their hug and their blessing before we entered into heaven. And for some of us, we would rather go to hell. So we condemn ourselves." Jesus once said that if you are presenting your gift at the altar, and then you remember that you have something against your brother or sister, leave your gift. Go back and be reconciled with your brother or sister, and then present your gift to the altar. And when his disciples said to him, "How many times must I forgive somebody?" thinking they were very generous, they said, "Seven times, Lord?" And Jesus said, "No, not seven times, but 70 times seven." And in his final act on earth, with his dying breath, Jesus looked down upon those who had betrayed and denied and crucified him and said a prayer, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." The challenge for us is to be the face of God to those from whom we are estranged, not for our own benefit or the benefit of this congregation, but simply for the glory of God.